Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Nathan, since the last time we talked, it seems like not a ton has changed. It's kind of been a lot more of the same for the St. Louis Blues team as we head towards the Olympic break.
Yeah, I feel like every time we start one of these, I feel almost bad. Like we're just talking about the same thing over and over, but it feels like the season has been like that, right? Like you might get a little flash here and there, like we got in the Florida game. That was It felt like a Blues game at first that it has all season, and then it got a little fun there at the end, right, and had a good time. Then against the Blue Jackets, right back to the same old thing. So here we are, you and I, talking about the same old thing.
Yeah, and this recent run where they've got 1 win in their last 7 games, like it's, I think everyone at this point in the season isn't all that upset. I mean, the players and the coaches I'm sure are, but if you're an onlooker, if you're a fan, you kind of see where the standings are and you say, regulation loss where some guys played well, not the worst thing in the world. It's honestly the most noteworthy thing from the past 2 weeks has been kind of who they've lost to in terms of the schedule, right? So They've lost 4 games in a row now to teams on the back end of a back-to-back. So Edmonton, Winnipeg, Dallas, Columbus, they all played the night before. And I believe that they all traveled, I want to say. And the fact is that the Blues lost all 4 of those games when they were rested and the other team was not. And they came out and, you know, some of those games were competitive. The Dallas game, the Winnipeg game, the Columbus game, they're all basically 1-goal games until the very end where Winnipeg and Columbus scored an empty netter. The Edmonton game obviously was not competitive, but it was struck me after the Columbus game, some of the quotes from, you know, Braden Shen and Jim Montgomery were that, you know, we thought that it was going to be an easy night and we're hoping for things to go right instead of kind of making things go right. So when you hear that kind of stuff, it leads you to kind of wonder what the mindset is heading into those games where it's a tired team supposedly, and it just hasn't gone the way for the Blues.
Yeah. As I was reading that story and after you sent it in and those quotes from Montgomery and Shen, I thought, man, like how does that even at that level, you know, like I kind of understand it at lower levels happening, but how does that happen at the NHL where at the NHL level where guys like are not locked in from the time the puck drops? And that seems like a thing it seems like a theme this season, but that seems to have kind of, I don't want to say taken over, but has seems to have been happening more lately throughout this run where this slow start. I mean, you know, and even when they're crawling back into games like they did against Florida, again, slow start and then take off once they kind of get going. And, you know, it's almost like they're never ready to hit the ice until, you know, midway through the second period or even the third period.
Yeah. And, you know, you spend some time around the game and you hear from players that the hardest thing in the league is consistency. You know, as a player, as a team, any player can be great for 1 or 2 nights. That's why they're in the best league in the world, because they're one of the best players in the world. No matter if you're a fourth line guy, top line guy, you can be great on any given night because you are skilled and one of the best players in the world. The issue is when you have to do it 82 times in a year, right? Like that's when it's hard. That's when it's hard. And, I keep a kind of a running stat when I look at the cap hits of the rosters on the ice and just say like, okay, I know, you know, the salary cap is kind of doesn't always tell the truth as to, you know, if you're a cap team, but you have a guy that's hurt, that's still counting towards the cap, the guys you ice are not, they're not right at the cap, right? Yeah. And so if you look at the last 11 games, the other team has had a more expensive lineup on the ice than the Blues have. And it's not a perfect corollary to winning and losing. Yeah. Like the most expensive team doesn't always win. But this year, when St. Louis is more expensive, they are 12-12-7. And when the opponent's more expensive, they're 8-14-2. So like there is a little bit of something to it. And one of the big things to that this year, recently, is Robert Thomas being out. I mean, he's been out since January 10. And that's when you can kind of see the talent disparity in terms of cap hits kind of show through from the opponent to the Blues. I mean, this is a tie with Kyrou for the most highly paid player on the team. And you take him out of the lineup, he's also their best player, a lot would say. Maybe not the best performing this year. I think Philip Roberg kind of has that. But they've had a worse lineup money-wise for some time now, and it's kind of showed in the results a little bit.
Yeah, as you were going through those numbers, you know, breaking down the records, you know, when they have a more expensive roster versus when they don't, as you were listing those off, I thought, how many of those, you know, when they were 12-12, and I think you said 7 when they were more expensive, how many of those were before these injuries started piling up, you know, and some of that big money and big talent started coming off the ice?
Yeah, I haven't broken it down like that, but like I can look at kind of what the numbers are and tell you that.
We know out of the 6 out of the last 7, they've been missing some like massive talent. So that would take care of 6 of those losses right there.
Sure. I mean, it's not a perfect thing. As I said, like even the first 11 games of the season, only twice was the opposition more expensive. And they had 3 wins.
Yes,
three
and wins we remember how the first 11 games went. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not perfect, but it is an indication that I think over a long period of time would kind of show disparity in teams. Like, I mean, it's ironic that some of the biggest differences have ended up being kind of poor results. I mean, on October 15 against Chicago, the Blues had a lineup that was $27 million more expensive than the Blackhawks. And they lost, I believe it was 7-4 that night.
Yeah, that game was brutal.
So that's been the biggest difference of all this season, and they got blown out. So yeah, like I said, not perfect, but it is something to look at when we look at, you know, the results recently and who's been in or out of the lineup. And one of those guys that we mentioned, Robert Thomas, the injury news for him recently was that he had a minor surgery last week on his leg. And that'll keep him out through the break, but it should allow him to return right after the break. Obviously, it's probably where we would have gone without the surgery anyways, just kind of shutting him down. But the break allows him to not miss many more games than he would have normally. And we'll see how he looks when he comes back.
We, as this started, you know, with him kind of not really missing any time, but missing practice here and there, and then starting to miss time, you know, I kind of wondered if this would be where this would go, you know, as it kind of seemed to slowly get worse. But now that he's had the surgery and he's shut down for a while, I'm kind of wondering how long this might have been bothering him before he started missing time, and if that may be I don't want to give the guy a pass. I don't want anybody to give me a pass, right? So I try not to give anybody any passes. But if he's been hurt for longer than we know, then maybe that would account for some of his production being down this season. And I'm hopeful that once, you know, even though the Blues are in the situation they're in, right? Like the playoffs, even though like they're mathematically within reach are further and further from realistic reach. Like I would love to see him come back after the break, fully healthy, you know, ready to go. And we see the Robert Thomas of old, though I am a little bit scared that if he does that, we get a repeat of last season and we all get our hearts broken again. So maybe, I don't know. It's a rough thing, but just glad he's getting healthy one way or the other.
Sure. Yeah. And I don't know that his surgery had to do with the injury in Colorado. It would make a lot of sense if it did.
Right.
I mean, that was late on New Year's Eve. He's late in the game. He gets fallen on by an Avalanche player kind of on his knee and slow to the ice, misses practice coming up a little bit after that. And he plays five more games after that Colorado game. And then that game in Vegas was his last game before he missed some practice and then missed some time with this injury. So like I said, I don't know that the surgery had to do directly with that injury in Colorado, but that it would make sense. He's been dealing with things throughout the season. If you think about it, he got hurt in Detroit on a hit up high by Alex DeBrincat, a same shift that Jake Neighbors blocked a shot and I believe broke bone in his leg. So tough shift for the Blues that night.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he came back after missing a little bit of time then. And when guys come back in the middle of the season, they're really never 100%, because if you wait to be 100%, you'll be waiting until April. Like that's just the fact. Is like every one of these guys throughout the entire season on every team is battling something. And for the most part, it's for 20 guys a night, I guess, it's not something that keeps them out of the lineup. But it's not like if you're in the lineup, you're 100% healthy and perfect. So I do probably believe that there was something sticking around after that Detroit game. And then obviously we saw after that Colorado game for five games, something stuck around. He was missing practices during that time. And then they finally kept him out of games. And what Jim Montgomery said was, every time you take a stride, it hurts. That's not an ideal situation for a guy who does move as well as Robert Thomas does. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what he looks like when he comes back. But, you know, it's kind of the bigger conversation around him continues to be the trade talk, if there is trade talk, right? Rumors out there,
right.
Fans talking about what the package would look like. And, you know, I know we talked last time about the comp with Quinn Hughes and maybe that's kind of what they're looking at. I think it could be, it's not quite the same package as the Hughes one. That was a four first round kind of type.
Effectively, yeah.
So I think it would be fewer than four, but maybe a higher caliber of return, right? So, I mean, Zeev Bouyam was I think he was 10, 11, 12, 13, something like that. That's when he was picked. If I think the Blues maybe would be looking out there for higher picks in recent drafts. And Elliot Friedman reported on Saturday on Sportsnet that there's not a lot of teams that can do what the Blues are asking for. And this is just me kind of connecting dots is, you know, we're talking about the Anaheims and San Jose's and Chicago's that have had multiple high recent picks that would even have the sort of package that the Blues could be looking for. I don't know. It's a difficult trade to kind of see to fruition. Like let's take the Sharks, for example. And again, this is me. I'm not saying that the Sharks and the Blues are talking Robert Thomas, but if we're talking about two recent highly drafted guys, and what that could look for not many teams that could do it, you'd be looking at like a Michael Misa who went second overall last year and Will Smith who went, I believe, I want to say fourth a few years ago. like you'd be looking at that type of thing, and I don't think a lot of teams would be willing to do that. Obviously, I don't think they're gonna do anything with Chicago. I think that, I think the Blues would be, Blues fans would hate seeing Robert Thomas in a Blackhawks uniform for the next 5-6 years.
Oh, but yeah, that would hurt. Yeah, I don't like it. Just even saying it made me feel yucky. Don't say that.
I think the conversation with Thomas, obviously it starts with who he is as a player, a true number one center, right-handed. And, you know, I know he has had some injury things in the last year or two, but for the most part, hasn't missed a ton of time. And then the kind of conversation moves on to what his contract is and where those numbers are right now across the league. His contract and the term he has left make him a massive, valuable asset that can fit in on a lot of different teams. And I think that's why you see some of these reports that the price is so high, because he might be one of the best tradable assets in the league, and if he is indeed a tradable asset. And like it's pretty extensive when you see $8.125 million on the cap hit for this year, and I believe it's five more. So that's pretty good when the market value probably puts him closer to 11, 12. And if you're a center, I mean, 13, some guys. So really valuable in that aspect of his game, in addition to his actual production, I think.
Well, and all that's to say nothing of his no trade clause, right? Like, would he want to leave St. Louis? Would he want to go to wherever? You know, should a team as unlikely, right, as it seems, that someone would, one, have the assets, and two, be willing to move them, would he be willing to go to a team that has that? So, I think where we kind of landed last time was, yeah, maybe, but the odds are so far stacked against, you know, don't hold your breath, kind of.
Yeah.
And I think that's, it seems like the odds just get lower every day. I don't see it happening. It just doesn't seem like a world where, you know, all the stars align, everything matches up perfectly, and it works out. But it just doesn't seem like it's there.
Yeah, and yeah, this discussion is regardless of whether the Blues actually should do it.
Right.
You know, trade a number one center that's 26, 27, whatever it is. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes from here. On the actual side of players playing, Jimmy Snuggerud.
And playing well.
He's got points in four straight games. Had the game winner against the Panthers the other night with 8.4 seconds to go in the third period. The Blues finally get maybe a little bit of karmic justice, scoring in the late in the third period after Dallas did it twice to them earlier on in the month. So Jimmy Snuggerud, four-game point streak, goals in his last two. He's got 6 points in his last four games. Are we seeing the outbreak for Jimmy Snuggerud right now?
The Snuggy breakout. I don't know if it's, you know, how do you know? You know, it's like, what did old boy say on The Office? You know, how do you know you're in the good days or till they're over or whatever? You know, so it's like that. How do you know it's a breakout until the breakout's over? I don't know. Mini breakout, you know, coming out party. I don't know what to call it, but he's been great the last few games. And man, that shot against Florida, wasn't that so pretty? Did you see the slow-mo on it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the slow-mo, no. The slow-mo, was it more aesthetically pleasing?
Well, it was, but it was one of those, like, you know, in a movie, like in a sports scene in a movie, like right as the action happens, you know, maybe the quarterback throws the ball and then his arm slows down and the ball moves real slow and
the music plays over it.
Yeah, like this sort of a cinematic moment. It was like that because he gets the pass and then they hit the slow-mo, right? He fires the shot and you actually, like, as they follow the puck, you see the goalie turn after the puck is already behind him. It was that fast, and it was like, it was so great. It looked just like a movie. It was great. It was very aesthetically pleasing. I liked the shot quite a bit.
Yeah, and the good thing about it too was that it was almost, the Blues had tried that shot seconds earlier. Like Jordan Kyrou tried that shot. It was blocked, and then they recover a puck. Pavel Buchnevich finds a great seam pass to Snuggerud over there. He likes to take one timers. He hasn't always been in that one timer position. Sometimes they've liked him at the net front. Sometimes they've liked him in the bumper. But where he can get his shot off like that is a good spot for him. And I think we're seeing him want to shoot the puck a lot more, right? I think if you look at his shot attempt numbers and his shots on goal numbers, especially recently, they have been ticking up a ton. And he's shooting from everywhere. He's shooting kind of when he doesn't even have a great shot. He kind of has that confidence to just try it, see if you get, you know, an offensive zone faceoff, a rebound, you have a chance for a puck retrieval. You have all these different things that can happen off of a shot on goal, and he's attempting a lot more of them. So good news for the Blues, who sometimes have tried to pass the puck into the back of the net, and this time they have a guy who's willing to shoot. And, you know, I've seen, if someone asked it, if he's breaking out now because his wrist feels a lot better, and I'm sure that's part of it, right? He had surgery.
Yeah, that's not going to hurt, right?
In December, but it wasn't like he was dealing with this for 2 months. I mean, he got injured in the Ottawa game right after Thanksgiving. He kind of fell on it weird. He played that next night against Utah, couldn't really do much, couldn't have a lot of power in his wrist and his shot. And so at that point, they decided to have surgery. And so it's not like it was something that was bothering him pre-Thanksgiving. It was something that happened right after Thanksgiving. Got it fixed, he's back, and now he's scoring goals. So I do think it probably feels better than that Utah game, but it wasn't like this wrist injury was bothering him a long time before they addressed it, I would say.
Do you think that after the Utah game, Montgomery made him hold a stick with just one hand, like the you know, the
Adam
like
Banks.
Like Bombay did to Adam Banks, and he has to turn it to prove his wrist isn't hurt, and then they're like, all right, surgery time, Snuggie. Can't turn the stick. It's time.
You know what? I can't say no, because I wasn't there. I don't know for a fact that that didn't happen, right? You know?
As far as I'm concerned, that's enough breathing room to say that it feels like it happened to me. It feels that's the truth in my heart.
Also, how about the stones on Adam Banks to just wear 99?
That cake eater? Come on, man. He thought he deserved 99, brother.
He said, you know what? You know what, Gretz? I got this.
Hey, you know what all that mattered, though, was putting on Charlie's jersey for the last game.
Yeah. See?
He didn't always wear 99. He was a team player by the end, Matt, and that's the most important lesson of the movie.
He was always the villain, so to speak, right? I mean, he was the hawk in the first one. I guess the second one, he was okay. The third one, he's too good for JV. He moves up to the varsity
team. Yeah, he's varsity. He's still a cake eater, but this time it's just because he's varsity. Yeah. Yeah. And he didn't show up in the Disney TV series. Shame.
Did he not? I don't think I ever saw that.
It's actually, the first season is a pretty good family watch. You should check it out. The second season, terrible. Don't watch it.
It is, what is it? It's called, is that Game Changers? Is that that?
I think so. Mighty Ducks Game Changers. It's got the mom is one of the gals from Gilmore Girls, and Bombay is in it, and they're leading a new group of kids.
Is this the one with Cam Fowler? Is Cam Fowler in this one, or is that a different thing?
Is Cam Fowler in it? He might be.
He is, yeah. Cam Fowler is. So, I mean.
Well, now I'm going to have to rewatch it.
So, the St. Louis Blues connection to the Mighty Ducks is that they've had a player in each of the three. Oh, each of the four movies. Like, I don't know. I don't know what this Cam Fowler appearance is.
There's a fourth Mighty Ducks movie?
So, Basil McRae was in that first one when the team was up in Minnesota. Right. He was part of the North Stars. Obviously, a Blue at some point. Then there was Gretzky. Gretzky was in the second one.
Okay. Yeah.
Paul Kariya was in the third one.
Yeah.
And Cam Fowler, I don't know what he made
in Game Changers. It's got to be Game Changers.
I don't know if it's a show or a movie. I don't know. I lost the plot after D3.
I'm going to have to go back and watch this now. This is a hearty recommendation for season one of Game Changers. Don't watch season two.
All right.
Yeah.
When we talk about Game Changers, Otto Stenberg, not there yet.
Oh, but that's good. That's a good transition.
It felt like a little force. It felt a little force there.
No, I loved it.
So the Blues sent down Otto Stenberg to Springfield, and it had nothing to do with his play, but more so keeping him eligible to play in the AHL during the Olympic break. So in the CBA, essentially the Players Association wanted to protect some players that could be sent down. They said, hey, if you've played X amount of games before the break, you're basically an NHL player and you deserve this break as well. And so that's kind of why that is in the CBA, because the Players Association wanted to guarantee a break for the guys who were being treated as NHL players. Now for Stenberg, they sent him down so that he could keep playing during the break. I think I counted, it was, I want to say 7 games that Springfield plays when the Blues are on break. And that'll be good for him to keep playing, keep developing, and not just sit on a beach somewhere, which I'm sure he would love to do too.
Well, I don't know. Like, it sounds better to me, but I'm not a hockey player. You know what I mean? So like, maybe for a hockey player, it wouldn't be better. I don't know that. Now you put an odd thought in my head. I have to think.
It's
about
fun
that.
When they all come back from an All-Star break or Four Nations break, Olympic break, whatever, bye week. They all come back a couple shades darker, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them forget how to use sunscreen, and some of them just tan a lot. But they all go and get some sun somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I would too after all that snow and ice you're around all the time. Yeah, is on Stenberg's. How does this work? Is this just to keep him eligible so they can, like, later after they're kind of out of it, they can send him back down to help the Thunderbirds or what?
So
help me understand
just,
what the move.
It's just for the break, right? So players who are in the NHL for, I believe it's at least 16 of the 20 games before break, they can't be sent down because they're viewed as NHL players at that point, and they are entitled to receive the break. Versus if you don't play that amount of games, you may not be viewed as an NHL player. You're viewed as kind of like an NHL guy that is eligible to play in the NHL during the break. Like, you're not entitled to the break, so to speak.
So just to keep him playing, basically.
During the Olympics, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there are...
I thought it was an eligibility issue or something for you know, to keep him able to go to the AHL later or something like that. I didn't understand that.
Yeah,
it was just to keep him active.
Keeps him for right now. Keeps him eligible to play in the AHL for the break. But there are rules later on around the trade deadline about sending guys down to be eligible for the AHL playoffs. And we'll cross that road in about a month or so before that. And but the Blues have been happy with Stenberg. I think it's tough timing for him because I believe he started to play pretty good hockey in the few games before he got sent down. So it wasn't like they were unhappy with it, but they just wanted to keep him playing, which is understandable.
I feel like he's kind of, I don't want to say I'm impressed maybe necessarily, because I don't, you know, I think he's been pretty good lately, but you know, not necessarily lights out. But it feels like he's kind of outkicked his coverage a little bit here for his kind of his first big call up. Like, a lot of times, you know, you don't necessarily expect guys to do a lot, just kind of, you know, get their heads on, understand the game at the NHL level, stuff like that. And he's done that. You know, in some of this first call up, but he started, you know, and Montgomery's talked about this quite a bit. You know, he's got a high hockey IQ. He's, you know, a real smart player. You're already starting to see how some of his decision-making is helping the Blues. And that's great to see it at his age. So yeah, I think anything they can do to get him more time seems like a good thing, you know, even though the drop in competition maybe won't, you know, iron sharpening iron like you usually like.
Yeah. And he's fit his role pretty well in the NHL, where you see him killing penalties pretty much since he debuted. You see him out on the ice in 5-on-6 situations defending the lead, especially without Pew Suter available. Like, they look towards Stenberg to kind of take some of those minutes that Suter had. So I think they should be pretty happy with what he's done so far in his NHL stint. And we'll see what he provides when he comes back, presumably after the break. And those will be some decisions that the Blues have to make. If you're getting Thomas back, we'll see about Dylan Holloway. If you're going to get Stenberg called back up, there's only so many roster spots, right? It feels like Robbie Fabry could be one of the guys that maybe they waive. Matthew Joseph, I'm sure, is on the chopping block as well.
I feel like he's been on the bubble for a while, yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder if for Joseph, if he contemplates the same thing that Brandon Saad and Alexander Texier have done in terminating their contracts, his cap hit is $2.95 million for a guy who's been kind of a 11th, 12th, 13th forward for the Blues. Yeah. And he's going to be a UFA in the summer, so it's not like there's extra years tacked on that he'd be surrendering. And we're got about 2 months left in this season. So I haven't quite done the math here, but if we do it off the top of my head, let's see, if there's about a quarter of the season left, $3 million, that's $750 that he'd be due. If you get a prorated deal at, let's say a lead man prorated deal, that would give him probably, a little under 20 grand. So you'd still be, $200 grand. You'd still be giving up, $400 grand or so. But it's not like you'd be surrendering $3 million. So I don't know, something to consider if the Blues do go that route, or if Matthew Joseph knows he's not going to get claimed, if he doesn't want to go to Springfield, if he wants to try to kind of sign a lesser deal somewhere else. It's maybe worth monitoring on that front.
You say forego $400,000, like it's just a thing, you know, like if I go $400,000, that means I'm working for like the next 19 years with no salary, you know, like,
hey, I mean, it's a much smaller number than Brandon Saad giving up $5 million. Like,
yeah, so must be, I should have been a hockey player, man. I got into the wrong business.
Not too late. Never too late to chase your dreams. Huh?
That's right. I'm going to be the first pick in the next draft. The Blues are going to take me instead of Ivar Stenberg.
You could be Gordon Bombay trying to resurrect a career after Pee Wee hockey.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the minors, hurt my knee, come back. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I just came up with the fourth movie. Oh. It's me. No hockey experience. It's like Ted Lasso, right? Ted Lasso meets the Mighty Ducks. I get hurt in my stupid NHL dream. You know, my knees are shot and I come back. I have to learn to skate. That was terrible. I have to learn to skate before I teach the kids. You know, it's a comedy. It's a calamity, honestly. It could be good.
Write the script, send it off to Hollywood.
I'll have ChatGPT do it and send it to Netflix. I'm sure they'll make it. That seems to be what they do now.
All right. So last thing here, we're going to set up a little interview. I talked to Nick Saraceno last week, and if you don't know who Nick Saraceno is, he is a St. Louis native that will represent Italy in the Olympics. He's played over there this is his fourth year now playing in Italy. He has lineage, family history from Italy, and what a story for him to be able to play in the Olympics as a native St. Louisan.
And he's listening to the interview, he's got a real, like, a unique St. Louis story, right? Like, Italian family, own a restaurant on the hill, own restaurants, you know, with one on the hill. You know, it's like, do you get any more St. Louis than, like, growing up the son and grandson of the toasted Rav man? You know what I mean? Like, and then go on to play professional hockey in Italy. Like, nothing feels more St. Louis to me than that, maybe. Like, yeah, if his last name were Bush, maybe that would, you know, that would be the only thing.
Sure. Yeah. And it was a great chatting with Nick. I hope you guys enjoy it. And we'll probably have something coming out in print later on with Nick Saraceno. So for Nathan, I'm Matt. Stay tuned for an interview with Nick Saraceno. And we're pleased to be joined by our latest guest on the NetFront Presence podcast, a CBC guy, a Providence College Friar, former player in the AHL and the ECHL, and the biggest title most recently, Olympian. We're joined by Nick Saraceno. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so there's a lot of places where I think we can go here, talk about playing in Italy, growing up in St. Louis. But let's go back to a pretty recent, I'm sure it'd be a pretty big memory for you. What was it like for you receiving the call or the news that you would be on the Italian Olympic hockey team?
Obviously, it was a great feeling. You know, this process started a few years ago, about 4 to 5 years ago, just obtaining my Italian citizenship and then being able to play over here and to be eligible to play for the national team. So when it all came together there with that final phone call, it was a huge relief, a lot of excitement, and I was very proud.
Yeah, so when did that happen? Who delivered the news? What's your reaction right after that?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a funny story. So over in Europe, in the European leagues where I'm currently playing, we have international breaks, kind of like how soccer does it. So a couple weeks throughout the year, your club team season will pause, and you go and play like these friendly tournaments with the national team. So I went to the first one in November. I did pretty well, was happy with how I performed. And then the next one was coming up in December, and I actually got hurt probably a week before that. And that's when some stress started kicking in. Not sure what was going to happen with the Olympic team and my chances. But fortunate enough, the coach called me. I think that day or shortly after I found out I broke my rib, he called me and just, you know, gave me the news, said, don't worry, you're going to definitely be on the Olympic team. So I was in a unfortunate spot. I got hurt, but fortunate spot where I got the news a lot earlier than most players, because I missed that second camp. But it was kind of a bittersweet day because I was injured, but I got some good news.
Yeah, I can imagine that's a scary thing when, you know, you're breaking a rib so close to what would be the Olympics, right? Yeah. So how are you feeling now?
I'm all healthy now, back playing, feeling good. We got two more games here with our club team before this Olympic break. So kind of trying to focus on that. We're right now trying to battle for home ice in the playoffs for my club team. So trying to stay focused, you know, stay in the present and play well for them and feel good about my game going into the Olympics.
Yeah, and you mentioned this has been a pretty long process, I mean, 4 or 5 years. When did this first kind of become an idea of yours to go play professionally in Italy for what, 3 years with Asiago, now with a Booster Style, and get your citizenship, become an Olympian? Like, when did that idea first hit you?
I kind of, once I graduated Providence, I you know, started my pro career, and I was kind of bouncing around the minors, had a few injuries here and there, and just couldn't really get my foot in the door. And then a European agent reached out to me and asked me if I'd be interested in coming over to Europe. You know, I've known a lot of people that have came over to Europe, and he brought up, he's like, you should look into your family lineage and see if you can get your Italian passport. And so kind of did all that digging. My grandfather was born here. He immigrated to the United States. So with my family history, it gave me the right to Italian citizenship. So I did that whole process, which included finding birth certificates, death certificates, marriage license, all that stuff. And went to actually the courts in Italy to obtain the citizenship. But you know, the Olympics was always kind of a selling point, but at that time it was still 4 years away, so you don't know, you know, how you'll be playing or mm-hmm. how you'll be feeling or all those unknowns. But I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity to you know, play a game I love and see the world a little bit and become a dual citizen of a great country like Italy. And so I jumped on the opportunity.
So what's your grandfather's name?
Bartolomeo, Bartholomew in the United States. But yeah, I'm not sure the year he came over. I should know that, but, I did do all the research, but yeah, that was a few years ago. But yeah, he immigrated to the United States, started some restaurants that are still going today, by his, four sons. And, so I have, a lot to thank to him. For sure.
In St. Louis restaurants?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Bartolino's.
Yeah.
Bartolino's and Chris's Pancake and Dining. There's five of them now. And Chris's, I think, will be opening another location in South County here in the coming year.
Right. So, I mean, even that process of getting birth certificates, like, I don't know where I would even start trying to find my grandfather's birth certificates and death certificate and all that stuff. Like, how much did you have to ask your family? And they have to go on a wild goose chase to get all that stuff.
Yeah, it was a whole team project, that's for sure. You know, we still have family that lives here. So my grandfather was one of eight, and he has a few living, or now he only has one living brother still living in Italy. But we contacted them, and finding a birth certificate from that long ago.
Yeah.
Italy has not gone digital yet, for sure. So they were had to go to the commune, their town hall in the small town he was from, and they found that birth certificate. And then I actually had to find my grandmother's parents' birth certificates, because she was born in St. Louis, but they were Italian citizens. So I had to go back through them too. And that was, I had some fortunate bounces with that one, and we knew someone that was in that town, and they were able to find that birth certificate. So it was a challenge, but now I could say it was all worth it.
Sure. And do you feel some sort of your connection to the motherland now that you've lived there for 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, definitely. You know, when it was brought, I did play 1 year in Slovakia, and my first year in Europe. And when I got this opportunity to come to Italy, I was very excited, just because the family history and all that. But now being here 4 years, you know, I really do feel I understand the culture. I know what the people are like. And, you know, it is a true honor to play for them, to represent this country. And it's going to be a good experience.
So you speak Italian now?
Not too well. I can understand it a lot better, but actually where I play now is we're up north, and it's all German speaking. So German is their first language here. So I don't really hear too much Italian now. My team in Asiago, that was all Italian. But it's very, our team, my club team is very North American. Like, we usually have an American or Canadian coach, and everything in the locker room, dressing room, is all English. So you're not immersed into it as much as I would like, because I would have learned it faster. But I did take some lessons, and so I have a little knowledge of it.
Sure. And then your national team coach, he's Finnish.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So even at the national team, it's all English. The support staff, like the trainers and the equipment manager and all that, they all speak Italian, but they know a little English. So it's not too hard to get by.
Sure. Now, what was that that initial adjustment when, well, I guess you first go to Slovakia for a year, and then you go play in Asiago for 3 years? Like, when you're thinking about hockey, I'm sure the first thought isn't Italy. So what was hockey culture like when you first moved to Italy?
You know, it definitely was different. So in Italy, it's really like the northeast region that plays this game, like up in the mountains and the Dolomites and the Alps here. So it's not a very popular sport in the country, but definitely up in this little area, the northeast area, it's very passionate here. You know, the fans are very passionate. We have very good fans at both clubs, in Asiago and in Pustertal here. So, you know, it was, the hockey itself wasn't too different. Yeah, maybe the ice surface was a little bigger, and there's a little more skating, not as much physicality, but with the culture, I would say, might have been a little different. More they're more relaxed until you lose, but they were more relaxed, and you know, they really cared about us as players, you know, and just as people. And it was really nice and kind of a breath of fresh air, which was a little different than Slovakia, where you're kind of like more felt like an employee there. And when you came to Italy, like it was, they really cared about you as a person and, you know, not just like your physical ability, but your mental health. So it was good.
Yeah, and Asiago, right? You play for them for 3 years, and then they are no longer in the ISHL. So I don't know how it all works for citizenship. Like, do you have to play for an Italian team? Like, so there's only a limited amount of options you have to continue there, or how does that work?
Yeah. So once you obtain your citizenship and the passport and all that, you have to, for IIHF, which is the International Ice Hockey Federation, to be eligible for the national team, you had to play in that country for 16 months. So the federation had to hold your player card for 16 months to be eligible for the national team. And now the national team was a goal for me, so I chose to c come play in Italy. And the league I am in now, it's an Austrian-based league. So we play a lot of teams in Austria. I think we have, there's 8 teams in Austria, 2 in Hungary, and 1 in Slovenia, 2 in Italy. So it's a kind of an international league, because most leagues over here, it's just within the country. It was good to be able to play in a good league and, you know, do the 16 months, and been able to stay here, and I'm happy here, and it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, and I've seen pictures of the, is it the Brewster Valley? Is that what it is? Okay, it looks beautiful. I don't know how much sightseeing you're doing during the season, but just what is it like living in that area of the country?
No, it's a beautiful place. For sure. The mountains are awesome. Being from St. Louis, you know, you don't get these views like we get here. The town I'm in too has got world-class skiing 10 minutes away. And it's right now in the winter, it's very busy. A lot of skiers, a lot of, you know, people travel all over the world to come ski here. So lucky to see that kind of culture. Growing up in St. Louis, didn't really learn how to ski, or, you know, and it was during the hockey season, so wasn't able to, you know, take many trips to go skiing. So to see this kind of culture and how it all works is pretty neat.
Yeah, and when you think about your club team, I believe you have what, 6 players from your team on the Italian Olympic team. Just is that going to be a really nice thing for you to have that familiarity going into the games?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of our advantages maybe going into the game is that we do play those two kind of friendly tournaments throughout the year. So, you know, I know all the teammates you know, that play in different leagues that will be on the team. But having guys that I'm with every day here, and they're going through that same experience, has been very helpful. And very excited for them for this opportunity, and I know we're looking forward to it.
And when we fast forward to February 11 against Sweden, what do you think that feeling will be like for you taking the ice in the Olympics against Sweden?
Think it's going to be a great feeling. It's going to be a proud moment, for sure. You know, but you can't really get too lost in that, because you definitely are, you're going up against some world-class players. So definitely will be excited to play, and just having a lot of energy, and you know, see where we stack up against the best in the world.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about St. Louis. Growing up here, what part of the area did you grow up?
I grew up in like South County, and then parents moved to South City, so around those areas. And then the restaurants, there's 2 in South City, so I hung around South City a lot, yeah, growing up.
Well, I'm sure the Hill's going to be rooting for you.
I think so too. I think
Yeah.
so too.
So, I mean, why what got you into hockey in St. Louis? Why did you do you pick hockey to play?
Honestly, you know, it's funny. My father was a soccer player. He played soccer at CBC, and I actually asked that question too. Like, why did you put us in hockey? And I guess the Bartolino's was on Hampton Ave, and the old arena was on, I would think it would be Oakland. I'm not sure what the road was called then. And all the Blues players would come in after the games, or after practice, and have lunch or dinner. And he got to know a few of them, and he kind of fell in love with the game. So he put his sons in it, and from there it kind of took off.
So, which era of the Blues was that? Like, which players would he have rubbed elbows with, you think?
Like Doug Gilmour. I think Rod Brind'Amour might have been there. So that kind of era.
And it's like, even for you, like, it's one thing to start it, right? And obviously there's a familiar aspect, but to continue it, to excel in it, to go to college and play professionally and be an Olympian, like, what kept you going there, and then even moving away to Iowa when you first went to junior, right?
Honestly, a lot of support from your family and your friends, like, and kind of some perseverance of like never really giving up. I would say I was kind of like a late bloomer. I know with junior hockey, like I didn't go to Iowa until I graduated high school, which was not as late, but it is kind of late with that. And then once I got to Iowa, I started playing well, and some colleges started talking to me, and I was like, okay, now I can maybe try to play in the college, play Division One, and was fortunate enough to get a scholarship at Providence College. And they're kind of going through a transition phase when I got there. They were kind of, there was a new coach for kind of, they didn't do too well the years prior. So when I got there, they're kind of trying to change the tide. And was able to get there, start playing right away, which was big. I got into the lineup right away, and we were able to kind of turn that program around, and was fortunate enough to win a national championship in 2015. That was a real big highlight for me. And even going through that, you don't know. Yeah, there's some NHL interest and all that, but you don't know exactly how it all works. And I was fortunate to sign with in Minnesota's organization after college, and so kind of gave the pro career a try. And throughout your career, there's so many ups and downs, and you kind of think back like, how did I get through all this? And I would say just so much support from my family and friends that always pushed me to keep going, and it's hopefully paying off now.
Yeah, so obviously your family is a big influence. Who were the biggest hockey influences on you in those first 18 years you're playing hockey in St. Louis?
Yeah, in St. Louis, we're very fortunate that a lot of the Blues alumni stay around St. Louis. And growing up, I actually had Al MacInnis as my coach. So learning from him at a young age, like Hall of Fame defenseman, like you can't, that's kind of priceless. So, I would say he is a big role model. And then playing junior B and down at Afton Ice Rink, had a coach there, Jack Behan, that was. He always pushed us to be our best, and John Jost at CBC was huge, and always he was, we always were very successful at CBC, and he was a big reason why, and he always pushed us to be our best. And St. Louis is blessed now too with a lot of great coaches. A lot of guys I grew up playing with are now coaching, and St. Louis is very lucky to have all of them.
Yeah, so when you think about that kid who first started hockey because his dad had some relationships with some of the Blues in the past, and you see that kid you grew up being, what would that kid think about you playing in the Olympics?
Honestly, he'd probably be pretty surprised because I didn't really know this was an opportunity until about four years ago, I think you would be pretty surprised, but I think you would be, proud just knowing what I've been through in the career and like all the ups and downs I've been through. And so I think he would be proud of where I'm at now.
All right, now I gotta ask you some food questions, right? at Bartolino's, like, if you're going there, what are you ordering? Like, what's your go-to when you go there?
See, I like to switch it up. I'm not very routine with my food, but right. I know a very popular dish would be the chicken spadini. I would say that would be the most popular that people definitely love and it's been on the menu for a long time.
And then you rotate through other ones, like what?
I would say they got a good pork chop there for yeah. sure. They do a really good job with they usually have a daily special that if some kind of meat or fish that would that probably would knock your socks off for sure. But kind of just depends. And a lot of time I'm kind of lucky if my little brother is working there, my cousin, I kind of be like, what do you got for me today? And I like to be surprised and they usually do a great job.
Okay. And then my other food question is, have you brought toasted ravioli to Italy? Has it crossed back no. over the ocean?
I think they would be shocked if I brought that here. They would be like, what is this? But no, it's funny. I actually, on my club team here, I have a fellow St. Louis guy on my team who went to CBC too. So, and we always kind of talk about the toasted ravs and what they would do if we brought one of those over here.
I mean, I don't even want to know what they would do with St. Louis style pizza.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like there's, you know, they do have like that thick crust pizza for sure, but there's a lot of places that have a thinner style pizza. So I don't know. I think they would enjoy it. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other food exports? You think they would maybe some gooey butter cake?
I think they would. You know, that's one thing they get mad about me with me here, because I always say their desserts aren't as good as America, because we use a lot more sugar.
Not a big tiramisu guy.
Yeah, I do like tiramisu. That was the one thing they got over us. But all the other things, a cake and all that, we're definitely, I would say, head over heels better.
Right. Well, Nick, thank you so much. I appreciate the time today. Good luck next month in the Olympics. I'm sure you'll have a blast. Is your family heading over there to watch you?
Yeah, I got quite a few coming over. I think we got about 20 family members coming over. So excited to see them, excited for this opportunity, and very honored to be able to do it.
Well, that'll be a great time. So thank you so much. Have fun. And congratulations again on being named an Olympian.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.